Welcome to the Ikario podcast with your hosts, Oliver Cowlishaw and the man himself.
I'm Shane Milach, and today we are continuing our series of how to get your shit together. So in this series, in case you have not caught up with the previous episodes, you should do that. We are going through the most important, like the most high leverage, low effort, big result things that you can do to get your shit together, which basically means to get various areas of your life sorted out. And we have talked about so far how to do this for your physical health, fitness, for your emotional health, kind of emotional management, and for your brain, for your mind.
Mind.
And now it is time to talk about your social life. So that is the next thing that we're going to talk about. And by the way, these dimensions of life, I'll sort of quickly reiterate, the reason we chose these is because each of these is kind of a pillar of being a well-developed human. And the way you can tell that it's a pillar is that when this is completely missing, it just wrecks your life and it becomes like the dominant problem in your life. And everybody has experienced this with health, right? Or if you're sick enough, all you can do is be sick and all you can think about is be sick. And it dominates your whole existence, your lack of health, right? And it's the same with all these other things, including your social life. So human beings are highly social animals. We require social connections. And if our social connections are of very low quality or we don't have enough social contact, then that is highly detrimental to our life quality and even to our health. So we, in the emotion episode, we were talking about gratitude as a way to boost your happiness. And there we saw that gratitude is one of these things. It's just highly correlated with happiness. So people who are more grateful are generally happier. And then that has a whole other kind of cascade of positive effects, including health benefits. So it's like grateful people end up living longer. And social connectedness is another one of those. So the quality of your social connections is also like a really strong determinant of your overall happiness, and as a result of that, of all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
So social connection, that's basically what we're talking about here. And the first thing I want to talk about, which can be, I think this needs to be addressed, right? We're talking about you want to have a good social life, and you want to, and that includes, you know, friends, that includes family, that includes people you work with, that includes your dating and sex life. All of that is under the umbrella of social in the way I define it here. And I want to start with acknowledging that a lot of people are used to all kinds of like toxic and negative relationships or strained relationships or difficult relationships. And it seems to me, and this is just my own observation, so I don't know if this is accurate, but it seems to me that it is more common to meet someone who has a difficult, strained relationship with their family members or with their primary family members than to meet people who have a really good, kind of relaxed, you know, wholesome relationship in their family. And I think this is an important thing to think about because the experience we have with our family kind of determines what we think of as normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of people's idea of a normal relationship is a pretty strained or even like toxic, even into abusive relationship emotionally.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one thing that came up for me then was the realization I had when I was going through my counseling and psychotherapy course, because we were doing research on humanistic psychologists. One of them is a guy called Carl Rogers, who basically just like, who sort of pioneered humanistic psychology. And I could go on for this for an hour, but I won't. But I'll say that one thing that he mentioned in his book, On Becoming a Person, which is a fantastic book, by the way, is that the way he sees it is in the counseling and psychotherapeutic relationship, in the space, the most important thing is the relationship between client and therapist. That's the most important thing. Without that, everything breaks down. And in his view, he saw that any relationship, any sort of connection between two humans that is a true relationship is therapeutic. by the very nature of it. And if you don't have that, you essentially have two people who they're not in it for reasons that would sort of benefit both people. This might be some sort of like ego game they're both playing or something. But the point is he made that a connection between two people is therapeutic by the very nature of it. And if it isn't, then you don't really have a relationship. You just have two, you know, God knows what you have.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really interesting, right? It is, because it can be deeply healing just to have a good relationship of any kind with someone.
Yeah.
That by itself, that's how I interpret that. It's like therapeutic. Just to hang out with a good friend and have a good conversation can be like a deeply healing thing.
Without a doubt, there's been some conversations I've had with close friends that have been more beneficial than a therapy session.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You just feel the empathy, you feel heard, and you feel accepted, and you just explore something. The person's really listening to you. And it's like, that is inherently therapeutic.
And so the first thing I want to say here is that whatever your experiences might be with this, and whatever experiences have kind of created your set point for what you expect from relationships, I just want to be very clear about this. It is absolutely possible to have like deeply nourishing and healing kinds of relationships with people. And it is absolutely not too much to ask. Okay, so as a human being, you have every right to expect that you have like supporting and just encouraging and positive relationships with people, right? It's not too much to ask that people don't judge you harshly, not too much to ask that people accept you for how you are. I just mentioned this because there are so many stories that I know, and you know, I've lived a little bit of this myself as well. I spent some time in a relationship that was bad for me and for her. You know, we were just not good for each other. But we were both stuck in this relationship for many years. And I think in part it was just because we didn't have anything to compare it to. You know, it was my first romantic relationship. And I think for her as well. And yeah, it's like we didn't have this attitude of, hey, it's fine to first of all say, hey, maybe we're not good for each other. And it's fine to expect more than this, you know. But it gets way, way worse. I think that in my own, like growing up, I never had like really difficult or toxic relationships. But I know, you know, many of my friends, a lot of people I know grow up in really difficult circumstances when it comes to relationships. And you learn to put up with all kinds of abuse. You learn to put up with, and you also kind of normalize it or even defend the behavior of people that are really not treating you well at all. And I think that's just the first thing I wanted to mention, is that we have to, or I want to encourage anyone who mainly knows difficult relationships to really, like, don't make that your norm. Don't expect that that's normal. It's absolutely possible to have a completely different kind of relationship and to have that be your norm.
Mm. And this reminds me of, because my last relationship was pretty damn toxic. And there was a moment where I was watching a movie and it felt like someone had reached through the screen and gave me a slap.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a quote in the movie, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, where one of the characters was basically reflecting to the main character about, okay, why am I in this relationship? Why do I keep going back to him, kind of thing? And the main character just says, we accept the love we think we deserve.
Mm.
And I just, it was like the serum was in. It was like, oh shit. I was experiencing this toxic relationship, and deep down I thought, this is as good as it's going to get. I should be grateful for this. This is as good as I deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Deep down, that's what I believed, although I didn't want to admit it. But it's just amazing how this movie, just in that moment, I noticed it. I was like, oh shit, I've heard it now. Yeah. I can't hide from that. So yeah, it's good that you mentioned that.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. Now, so let's get to our three things. What are the three things you can do to level up this part of your life? And right away, this comes into an interesting problem, because you can't change other people directly, right? So even if you say, well, the relationships I have right now are kind of bad and I want better relationships, like, you can't force someone else to treat you differently. Obviously, you can establish boundaries and you can try to work on the relationship, but ultimately you cannot make them do anything.
Mm.
And that's why I really want to focus here entirely on things that are 100% in your control. So no matter what your situation is, no matter who the people around you are, even if they never change until the day they die, these are three things you can do that will make a difference.
Bring it on.
And the first thing is what I'm just going to call consider the best person. So right now, and you can also do this as a writing exercise, you can write about this and think about who is like the kindest, most positive, most wholesome, most uplifting person that you've ever encountered in your life. Think about what are the kindest things anyone has ever done to you or for you? And that can also include strangers. What are the kindest, most positive things that another person has ever done or said to you? And think about how, and I think this is also where we see this massive power that social connections have. Because someone can come along and say something to you that just kind of ruins your week.
Mm.
And someone can come along and say something to you that just is so uplifting and inspiring. It makes you feel so much better, right? So think about the positive side of that. Think about what are the best things that you've ever experienced, that you've ever been on the receiving end of. And then realize that you can do that kind of thing for other people, right? So you can be, you know, kind and warm and supportive and empathetic and patient and understanding and non-judgmental and so on and so forth with other people. There's nothing that stops you from doing that. And it's important to, like, the one thing that is also difficult if you come from like a toxic relationship background, the one thing that you have to learn to overcome is that this is not a transaction. This is not, you're not waiting to be kind to someone until they deserve it.
Mm.
You're not strategizing about, should I be kind to this person? What am I going to get in return, right? You can give just for the sake of giving. And as well, like, nobody can stop you from doing that. Like, you have the power to do that.
Mm. So what do you think about this? So when you mentioned just then about you having the power to do that, mm-hmm. and you're obviously suggesting that in the context of improving your social connections and your social relationships. But it's really interesting how you've not gone to, okay, you ask people for this, and you've not gone at it from the perspective of taking.
Mm-hmm.
Straight away with this point, you've gone at the perspective of you can be that for other people. And it would seem kind of strange for people, for some people to be like, well, how does doing that improve my social connections and stuff? I mean, shouldn't be strange, but it might
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
But something that comes up for me is an idea from Eckhart Tolle, where he suggested in the book, The New Earth, or A New Earth, that what you think the world is withholding from you, you are actually withholding from the world. Mm. Might be a massive oversimplification, a lot more complex and all that stuff. But I know that when I first heard the idea, it was quite interesting to me, because at the time I was thinking, I saw a great lack in my social connections. And I thought, you know, I wasn't feeling the warmth, I wasn't feeling the acceptance and stuff. And just reading that kind of caused me to examine that and thinking, hang on a minute. So am I being loving and accepting and caring and reaching out to people without invitation? Am I doing that? And the answer was no, I wasn't at all. So I wonder how widely applicable that is. I wonder what you thought about that.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, I have had a similar experience where one of the things I had to learn, because I've always been a kind of a loner type. And so, you know, not very sociable, certainly not like the party goer or whatever. And so I noticed at some point that I had like a set of expectations where it's like, well, other people, it's more other people's role. You know, it's like if anyone out of our friend group is going to say, hey, let's go do a thing together, it's certainly not going to be me, right? All these other people are more sociable and more socially attuned and stuff like that, you know? It's like clearly everyone else's role to do that. And that was just what my excuse sounded like. But like the truth is, why not? Why not me? If I want to spend more quality time with friends, why not reach out to those friends and be the one who says, hey, let's go on a hike together,
you know? Yeah, that's a good point.
And so, like you say, it's like if you reach out and create that situation or say, hey, look, let's just have a cozy evening, let's just sit around and talk. And you do that, you invite people in kind of a warm and sharing and accepting way, then you will, that's what you'll get in return in a way, right? Because then you will create that situation where it turns out, oh, everybody else wanted this too. And now we're all just chilling and being nice to each other, you know?
Nice.
So in that way, it does, and that's one of the reasons to do this, is because by doing this, by starting to do this, you will start kind of finding the right person, because the people who respond to this positively are people who will reciprocate this kind of thing, right? And so that can really help change the nature of your social circles or attract new people into your social circles and give you the kind of experience that you're looking for. Although, like I said, it's not a transactional thing. Because look, one of the reasons this is important to me is that I had this experience when I was young. So when I was like a tortured teenager, and this was a pretty dark time for me, where I was depressed without realizing it, and I was just, you know, struggling and suffering from all kinds of things. And a friend of mine, she was the girlfriend of one of my friends, and she basically took me under her wing a little bit. And she really didn't have to do that. Like, she just, for some reason, she just chose to care about me. And she was, especially, I only realized this looking back, like how often she went out of her way to reach out to me and to spend time with me. And even when I was being difficult, to try and get me out of my shell just a little bit, you know? And I can tell you for sure, many of the times that we met were not that fun for her, you know? She wasn't doing this primarily for her. Like, she was sometimes just dealing with this difficult, grumpy teenager. But for some reason, she decided that, like, she was going to be that person in my life. And she's basically one of the most important people in my life. You know, I can't say how much I benefit from having been given that. And it's also just something like, look, do this because it can change someone's life. It can change someone's life completely. And even if it's just that you give someone some acceptance and some kindness and some patience every once in a while, it can absolutely change someone's life. Mm. And, you know, do it even just for that reason. Like, be that person, you know, be that amazing person in someone else's life. And to make that more specific, so how do you actually do that? So I would recommend writing about this. Like I said, you can write about, what are the kindest things that anyone has ever done for you? What are things that anyone's ever said to you that have kind of lit you up? And then you can think about, well, what is something you could do? What is a simple thing you could do to take a step in that direction? You're not just going to transform into a saint overnight, right? But it's like something that someone did for you that was an important, meaningful gesture. Can you do something like that for someone else? That's just like one step, right? Something that someone said to you that made you feel understood or accepted or just that was important to you. Can you do the same thing? Can you say that one thing to someone else? And like I said, like, the question is, who can you give this kind of gift to of just real attention and acceptance and warmth and support without wanting or needing anything in return? And this is something that, yeah, write about that and practice it in small, small steps. This is something that is not necessarily immediately going to change the nature of your social connections in a massive way, but it's something that will make a huge difference in the long term, a huge difference in the long term. If you build the habit of thinking about how can I be more like the absolute best people in my life, even if it's only in little ways, in the long term, this will be life-changing.
I think that's brilliant. I really do. I think that's awesome, because I'm relating this straight away to my own life. And for some reason, I don't entirely know like the ins and outs of this, but for some reason, it brings me a sense of satisfaction and warmth when I'm listening to someone. Like, when I'm listening to them and I'm not judging them and I'm just completely present with them, and I allow myself to just relax and just be curious about them for a while. And at the moment, it doesn't feel like a conscious effort. It just sort of happens like naturally. But if I think back a while ago, like a long time ago, it was because I didn't necessarily feel that heard. And I can't remember who it was specifically, but I remember that the brief moments I'd have with a variety of people where I would feel listened to, where someone would be hearing me out about something I was passionate about or something, and would sort of ask, actively listen, like ask questions and stuff and express a kind of authentic curiosity, for some reason that would resonate with me and make me feel appreciated. Mm. But this person isn't throwing their opinion my way. This person isn't waiting for their turn to speak. This person is just is taking an interest in me, just as I am. Mm. And for some reason that resonated with me, and I kind of kept that with me. And now it's when I'm doing that, it really feels like there's a connection happening. Yeah. And it's gratifying for its own sake, but as I say, it's not a conscious effort that I'm doing to get something out of it. It's just a habit that I've built up over time that for sure has improved my social connections as a byproduct. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm retroactively looking back and thinking, I actually applied that rule that you just said without knowing it at the time. Mm. I was like, what do people do that I appreciate? I was like, that must make other people feel like I feel. So I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. So, and that actually leads well into our second point, which goes into more. So the first point is more about the long term, right? You're planting seeds for the long term here. The second point, which I'm going to call slow speech, is more about the immediate social interactions you have. And I call it slow speech because if I look at all the communication, I don't really want to call it problems, but the So I'm really interested in how people communicate. And most people, most of the time, communicate suboptimally. So, which is to say that they communicate in a way that's not in line with what they want to get out of an interaction, right? And a lot of these problems, a lot of the problems of either, you know, you're not expressing yourself clearly, or there's tension when you talk to people, or loads of other things, are basically from, it's almost like being in too much of a hurry and being too self-focused, essentially. And so the very simple idea here is the idea of seek first to understand before you seek to be understood. And slow speech, like if you just think of any interaction as just slow it all down, that will fix a lot of these problems. So I'm basically deliberately presenting something that's really simple, but that is tied to many different things, right? Where you don't even have to understand the details of everything that's going on in the background. If you just think about, just slow it down, you will automatically improve across like loads of dimensions that usually cause problems in communication. And so the first aspect of slowing down is to listen intently. Something you mentioned just before was to listen for the sake of listening and not to wait for your turn to speak. And I think this is one of the most common, let's say, communication mistakes people make. And it's very natural, right? That you're listening to a conversation and you're kind of waiting for your in. You're like, ooh, I can say something about this. And it's like, I can't wait for you to stop talking so I can get my thing in.
And you know when you're doing that, because what will happen, the best conversations I have, conversations where, and let's like right now, we're like in a flow of conversation, something will come up, but then you'll carry on talking, something will come up and I'll just sort of let it go. Mm. But what I've noticed is the worst conversations I have, or the least satisfying conversations where we don't really connect that well, is when I'll have something come up and I'll just sit and just pay attention to that thing while that person keeps talking to me. And then when there's a break, I'll be like, right, here's this thing I thought of 5 minutes ago that might not even relate at all to what they've just said. And they'll know that. It's that's not quite related to what I just said, but you know. Mm-hmm. And if two people are doing that, then they're not really communicating. I mean, they're flapping their gums at each other, but like they're not actually communicating. So they're communicating suboptimally, as you would say.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it is a natural thing. And one of the things you can do is to trust that if the idea is important, you will remember it. So if I'm sitting here and you're saying something and I do think, oh, I have the perfect thing for this, And because it can also be selfless in the sense that it's not necessarily only about, oh, I want to be the one talking. Mm. It can also be that I think, hey, you're talking about a problem and I've just thought of the thing, you know, that you need to hear.
Yeah.
But I can also say, look, I can trust that if this is so important, like I will still remember it like 2 minutes from now. I can let you finish still, you know?
Yeah, I don't need to cling to this thing if it's important.
Yeah. And if I forget in 2 minutes, then how important could it have possibly been?
Yeah, of course.
So that would be, that's one part of slowing down. So instead of being in a rush to get in, just be okay, just let the other person talk. And also, don't be afraid to pause and think. You don't have to fill the gaps of silence. You know, if someone asks you a question, you can just think about it for a moment.
Yeah, well, the thing is with that, it just comes to mind. I went on a date with a woman once, and I quite like silence. I can sit in silence for a really long time. But on this date, we were talking, and she'd ask a question, and I'd sort of take a second, just be like, And then she'd fill it with another question. It's like, it was really quite remarkable. I'd never been on a date with someone or been in someone's presence up to that point with someone who was so uncomfortable with silence that it needed to be filled with like another question or something like that. And it was inherently, the whole conversation was like quite stressful actually. Because it's like, it's like forced me to have to like come up with the answer really quickly before she'd like dive in with another question to try and fill the silence. It was like, we were just making noise at each other, but I didn't even know the person really. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, sit and be okay with silence and be okay with pausing and thinking and yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that also involves, there's also the other side is you don't have to pounce on every silence that another person leaves. Mm. You can also give someone else a moment to think about it. And yeah, I think that's something that just upgrades the quality of your conversations. And another one you also mentioned already is just ask questions. You know, if you want to be seen as the most interesting person, be the most interested person. So you just ask them about them. And that can be, sometimes that can just be a lot more interesting than talking about yourself. Just think about it. You already know all this stuff about yourself. Why not find out about the other person, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you say that, but I must say there's certain things that I've found out about myself through talking about myself in a conversation.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
So, but it does make sense.
Yeah. So, and then the final point here, the final like practical way to implement this is to learn how to end your sentences. So this is a general speech pattern that a lot of people have is that they don't end their sentences. And in practice, it looks like you speak and even though you come to the end of a sentence, you end the sentence with an upward inflection in your voice. And that creates the tension where you have to continue speaking. And it's just, you can't leave that hanging. You have to keep going every time you raise your voice. Even if it was actually the end of the sentence, oh my God, I'm stuck forever, right?
Endless loop.
Yeah.
I can't get out of this thing.
And so this is something you can see in yourself as well as in other people, that a lot of people have the tendency to repeat their points because they say everything that they wanted to say, but they don't end the sentence. And then it's like, oh, crap, I guess I have to say it again.
It's interesting. I can't say, I mean, it's the kind of thing that when you hear, you're going to just see everywhere now.
Yeah.
But it's never occurred to me before how an upward inflection almost contractually obliges a person to just continue talking because they've set themselves up. They haven't ended a sentence.
Yeah. And it's so weird. And if you try it, you know, like you can try doing this in a conversation. Speaking of leaving pauses, right? If you're talking and you end with an upward inflection, everybody's going to be like looking at you going, what's next?
And it's like, oh, yeah. That was the end.
Yeah, it's super weird. But that's such a simple thing where you can make your communication much cleaner and much more concise by practicing to end your sentences. And it's just that you just downwards inflect at the end of a sentence.
You practiced it.
There, that was a demonstration of how what it sounds like. So, okay. So yeah, that's basically it. So think of it again under the umbrella of that the thing you can remind yourself of is just slow down your communication. Slow down your one-on-one communication with people and see how that affects the quality of the interaction. So you know, how well connected do you feel to that person? How memorable is the conversation? And what I suggest is that when you do this, those things go up, you feel better connected to people. You feel like it was a higher quality interaction. And you like that person better, most likely, from doing this.
Hmm. Yeah. And just something quick about that. Doing this actually helped me with my social anxiety. Like, I used to have social anxiety. I used to spend deliberate time alone because when I'd be around people, I'd feel quite anxious. And the way I think about this is that when I was around people, when I was socially anxious, I'd feel anxious and I'd talk quickly, and the anxiety was forcing me, it almost led to a bunch like really cyclical, constant thinking. And all of it was self-referential. It was like, how am I coming across? How am I, you know, what can I say next to appear this and that? That's what would dominate my thinking and prevent real connection from happening. Now, when I started to slow things down, that allowed me to feel calmer around people, which would lead to a reduction in the amount of self-centered thinking I was having, which then led to me actually being able to listen to people. And that spiraled upward positively over time, improving my social connection. And that did come from just breathing and slowing down and allowing the silence to be there and not feeling like I had to constantly qualify my place there and everything like that. And it really is something as simple as that. You know, you slow the hell down and works. And
you can also treat that like as an experiment, you know, see what happens, because it could be interesting. So that's our second thing, slow your speech. The third thing is something that was, to me, perfectly summarized. We recently watched the movie The Green Book, which is an amazing movie.
Brilliant movie.
And there's this one phrase that to me just perfectly summarizes that, which is this: the world is full of lonely people afraid to make the first move.
Ooh.
The world is full of lonely people afraid to make the first move. And this is something that I think is just, I found this to be true in so many ways. And not just about loneliness, which I think is true. I think we have a huge problem with loneliness and social disconnection in our world, right? It's, our social ties are in trouble in general. But not just for loneliness. See, the thing is, for me, as an example, I have a lot of interests or a lot of ways of social interaction that are, or that at least initially seemed like they're unusual, and I felt alone in that. So I think it's easy to think that, yes, there are these things that I want, that I long for socially, but I'm the only one. And I think, you know, a typical example of this is that, for me, I'm interested in personal growth. I'm interested in, like, I'd rather have a long conversation about books or some idea or something while sitting around than to go out and party and drink or even watch a movie or something like that. And it's easy to feel alone in that. It's easy to look around and be like, well, it seems like everybody just wants to party all the time. It seems like nobody's interested in having any interaction that doesn't involve them being intoxicated first, right? And so to feel like, well, poor me, I'm the only one who wants something else, I guess I'm just going to be alone forever. And also, let me just point out here, you could also feel a bit good about that. You know, maybe you feel like all these other people are so shallow, but I'm special. I'm special because I want to talk about books instead of watch movies. If only other people were as cool as me. So you can like be the victim and feel really good about being the victim as well. And that could, I'm mentioning that as well because, well, it's kind of funny, but also but also because that can be something that makes you want to hold on to that worldview, you know? And you gotta let go of that worldview if you wanna be less lonely, basically. Because as it turns out, what I've discovered is that yes, going out and getting drunk and doing like this kind of entertainment and consumption-based stuff, that's the socially sanctioned stuff. That's what everybody does. That's what you see everywhere. But loads and loads of people have exactly the same feelings as me about this. Loads of people would rather sit around on a cozy couch and talk for hours instead of being drunk at a bar. And all you have to do is like be the first to make the suggestion, you know? So that's something that I just started doing, is that I do, the social events, the social things that I organize are simply aligned with the things that I like doing. So they tend to be, so obviously I don't organize a bar crawl. They tend to be things that are either like active, doing stuff outside, or like I said, literally find a way to get people together, you know, start a book club and have people explicitly, we're going to meet and talk about books. And you'll find that obviously not everybody is thrilled about this, but the people who want the same thing and have maybe been longing for this for years and years, but they just never said anything, are right there already in your social circle, you know? So you just got to go first. You just got to be the one who says, this is what I want. Let's make this happen. And yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So something I wanted to mention was, I guess, an overly self-aware, slightly uncomfortably self-aware reason why I, and this relates to something you mentioned just then, is that this sort of you feeling pretty good about that, you know, like, yeah, all these people, they're getting drunk and I'm not, what's wrong with them kind of thing. And something I recognized in my own journey to improving my social circles and stuff is that what was, it came to a certain point where I had to recognize that one of the things that was creating this, what I used to call this 3-inch thick field of like glass, 3-inch thick glass between me and everyone else, was actually my own sense of, I guess, grandiosity. Whereas inside, I thought that in some sense, I thought that I was a little bit better than people. And I'm talking a few years ago, this was, I thought I was a little bit better than people. And I didn't want to reach out because part of me was like, no, I shouldn't have to reach out. People should want to reach out to me. And I thought it was just worth mentioning because it's an interesting realization I kind of had that I wouldn't have changed things for myself if I'd not have made that realization, you know. And then the things that I felt grandiose about, which might have been that at the time, or like I was into spirituality at the time, I developed like this spiritual ego. People who meditated and people who didn't, it's like, people don't meditate. Oh, you don't realize what that's doing for you. It's like, oh yeah, it's doing working wonders for me. Sat there judging everyone, isn't it? You know. But until I started to let that go, it's like right now I don't like when people go out and party and stuff, or when people get drunk or even alcoholics and stuff. I like to just repeat the mantra to myself: it's a tough life, you know. Life is tough. Life is hard. You know, no matter what they're experiencing or what they're going through or how they're dealing with it, it's like, look, I do not know the first thing about their life. I could just see someone who's an alcoholic who's getting drunk at like 9:30 in the morning. Like, I could be like, yeah, self-development ego. That person should, I could notice this ego kick off. But the fact is, I just don't know what their life has been like. Yeah. And when I experience this, and it's important for me to mention this, because when I repeat that to myself and when I remember this, it makes me feel connected to the person. It's like, yeah, you're dealing with a tough life, mate. I'm dealing with a tough life too. It's just I've decided to meditate and deal with it that way, and you drink, but we're dealing with the same life and the same, you know, the same suffering, the same circumstances. I hope you'll be okay. Rather than, yeah, you should meditate. And it's like, fucking hell fire. It's like, so
this kind of self-righteousness can, it's one of the ways in which we deceive ourselves. And, you know, on that note as well, like taking the other person's perspective, I think a mistake that we easily make when it comes to our social connections is that we feel like, well, I'm not going to reach out to this friend because they never reach out to me. And, you know, if they really cared about me, then they would. Like, listen, go through your contacts right now and ask yourself, how many of these people do you genuinely like and you haven't reached out to them in ages? Probably quite a lot. So why can't they be the same? You know, some people are just not good at that, okay? Some people are just not good at maintaining social relationships. And do I have to turn that into some kind of a pissing match of, oh, but I contacted you the last two times? No, it's fine. We like each other. You're really bad at this. It's fine. I'll take care of it. You know, I'll make sure that we stay in touch. Perfectly fine.
Yeah, because if you follow that self-righteous track through to its end, you'll be in a room alone.
Yeah.
Looking at your phone contact group and just like, oh, that person should have reached out. Oh, fuck that guy. I'm not reaching out to him. It's like, yeah, you enjoying this? Because you sat here alone. You're not seeing anyone in days.
Yeah, exactly. And also the thing you mentioned, I think we'll have to make a separate either podcast episode or a content piece about this. There's this thing that I think of as the sheeple fallacy, where everybody thinks that everybody else is sheeple, you know? It's like you have, I imagine it's like you have a bus full or a metro full of people, you know, and you're like sitting there, you're glancing up from your phone going, look at all these other people. They're all miserable. They all, you know, they're all shallow. They're just sheep. Look at them all. They look miserable. They're all looking at their phones. And you go back to looking at your phone. It's like, hold on. How many other people are thinking that about you, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's also good to, again, like let go of that self-image. It's, yeah.
It does. And if we're talking about improving your social connections, I think that's that sort of, that kind of stuff's got to go. Mm-hmm. The self-righteousness. I think it does.
And so also one more thing on this, basically following this track of going first, one more thing that I have done in several contexts with social groups is just to be explicit about how I want the group culture here to be different. So the idea of group culture is basically just like the dynamic within the group. And, you know, like we've discussed before, you can have groups where the dynamic is tense and toxic and difficult and everybody's pulling each other down and it's miserable, right? And you can have groups where it's like uplifting, it's encouraging, it's relaxed and so on. And the way people interact, it's like the unwritten rules of how people behave with each other in the group, that's essentially the group culture. And I also, because like I said, I'm interested in personal growth. And so I will be explicit about that where I say, listen, what I want to do here, you know, maybe I want us to work out together, you know, or that's my suggestion. Let's work out together once a week or something. But also, let's maybe talk about our goals and, you know, tell me what your life goals are and encourage each other or try to help each other out or something like that. Basically, I want to create a group in which we are growth minded and we encourage each other's growth and progress. And we, you know, that kind of dynamic, basically. And where you're explicit about that, listen, that's what I'm trying to create here. Can we all agree? Like, and it's basically like, if you're not into that, that's perfectly fine, right? There's every other group has an accidental culture. If you want a group with an accidental culture, choose any other group, basically. Hmm. So it's not like, it's not a problem if someone rejects that. I understand that not everybody wants that. But this is the thing about group culture. Like almost every social circle is accidental, and almost every culture in that circle is accidental, which is to say that maybe it's good, but it's good by accident. You got lucky. And maybe it's bad and you got unlucky, but nobody's doing anything about it. Nobody's acknowledging that this is a thing and that actually, like, who wants to be in a toxic group? Mm. Nobody wants this. We're all just like stewing in each other's misery and making each other more miserable. What is this? Nobody wants this, right? And to just be like, and to go beyond just neutral. You go, well, you know, I guess this is normal, but we're not too personal with each other because that's uncomfortable. And, you know, and the typical kind of thing, you know, if someone gets a little bit too ambitious, we just take some jabs at them and, you know, pull them down a little bit because, you know, you don't want people to get uppity. Like, no, let's do something better than that. And again, be explicit about that because it's one of those things where you can feel like you're the only person in the world who wants that until you make that suggestion and you realize that everybody's like, oh, thank God, I've been wanting something like this my whole life.
The idea of being explicit and a group culture can, like, existing within a group of friends, for example, it really resonates because I used to be something of a chameleon. So like I'd have a bunch of different friend groups and there'd be some friend groups where it'd be very clear to me how they dealt with their problems. Because I've always been, you know, pretty, for a British guy at least, quite emotionally, you know, talkative. I'm pretty comfortable communicating with my emotions and this and that. And it'd be interesting to me how I'd sometimes encounter a group and it's just, how do they deal with emotional issues? And sometimes it'd be the case that the unwritten rule was, we do not talk about that. We drink, we use maybe passive aggressiveness to deal with any conflict. And we essentially like laugh it off, which can be good, but it was, it's interesting. I'm thinking of two specific friend groups and it's like, okay, that was never explicit. Like no one ever said, okay, here's how we do these things. But it's like, it's very clear that they just sort of slipped into that pattern of behavior and everyone did it. Mm-hmm. That's the interesting thing. Despite the fact that everyone is an individual within a group, when it was all together, the group would exhibit these characteristics together. And it was just like, very interesting to put it through this framework, because obviously I didn't understand it like that at the time, but it's obvious that that's what happens. If you're not explicit about something like this, then you'll sort of slip into an accidental culture, mm-hmm. and God only knows what that's like.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point that you make about, like, group culture is completely unwritten and it's accidental, but it's very clear. Like, clear, we do not do this. This kind of thing is not, nobody mentions this. Like, nobody has to say it, but it's like a, it's almost, it feels like a set in stone rule that just came out of nowhere somehow. It's weird.
Yeah, and no one acknowledges it, but when you join it, you kind of, you learn that no one's talking about their emotions.
Yeah.
One person's maybe struggling. It's kind of obvious. They're very quiet and they're not usually. But no one's asking them how they are. It's mm-hmm. just like, you know, it's just, okay, we don't ask people how they are. Okay, well, I guess no one else is doing that. There's like 20 people. No one's asking them how they are. And yeah.
Yeah. So the final thing I would mention here for someone who's interested in this idea of culture and wants to learn more about this and pursue this further, my absolute favorite book on this topic, and actually one of my top favorite books of all time, is The Culture Code by Daniel Coyle, which goes into a lot of detail on what is culture, what is group culture, where does it come from, and what are things that you can do to develop group cultures. Really fascinating to me. And yeah, it's a worthwhile read, because even though it's written, I think, for like a business audience, so it's a lot about like team culture within a business or corporate context, but I think there's a lot of overlap where it's life advice more than it is business advice, the way I see it.
Cool.
All right. So that is how to get your shit together socially. So again, the top three things are: think about how you can become more like the best people you've ever encountered. Number two, slow your communication. And number three, remember that the world is full of lonely people afraid to make the first move. The show notes for this episode, where you can subscribe and get the, you know, links to everything we mentioned and all that stuff, is at ikario.com/005. And, you know, you should do the thing. You should subscribe to everything that we ever make and click all the buttons.
Do not miss a thing. And it's very important. It's extremely important. Don't miss a thing. Yes. Subscribe to everything.
Subscribe in every possible way that you can, and become an Ikario fanboy. That is the way forward.
It's the only way forward.
And tune in next time, where we'll talk about finances.
We'll talk about cheddar, how to basically be balling, how to hard
make the cheddar and bring home the bacon, and possibly even other food analogies.